We now begin the 13th and final chapter of Maseches Ksubos, and now we get to a hodgepodge of various halachas. The first couple of Mishnayos here are going to be talking about certain contentious issues that arose in Yerushalayim, based on the psukim of certain dayanim, and not all have to do with Ksubos at all. There'll be different topics, but because four of them impinge on our topic of Maseches Ksubos, the obligation between husband and wife, so it features here in Maseches Ksubos. So the Mishnah begins by saying, Shnei Dayane Gzeros Hayu B'Yerushalayim. There were two prominent judges in Jerusalem. Their prominence is reflecting the fact that they would impose penalties on thieves, says the Gemara. In fact, there's another Girsa, another version of the Mishnah, which says not that they're Dayane Gzeros, they were judges who made certain rulings, but rather Dayane Gzelos, they were judges who imposed penalties on various robberies. So they lived in Jerusalem, and Admon was their name. One of them's name was Admon, and the second is Hanan ben Avshalom, or Avishalom. Now, the Admon, he doesn't have whose father's name is, because he was only Admon in Yerushalayim, so he's known as Admon. As far as Hanan ben Avshalom, or Avishalom, so since there's other Hanans, like Hanan HaMitzri, so we needed to know which Hanan he was, therefore he gets the name Hanan ben Avishalom. Tosa says it couldn't be that his name is Hanan ben Avshalom, without a yud, as the Giras and the Gemara, because Avshalom, David HaMelech's son, was a Rasha, who has no chelik in Olam Haba, and the name of the wicked should rot, so therefore no one's going to name their kid named Avshalom, so it must be it's Avishalom. Okay, whatever the case is, the Mishnah says, Hanan Omer Shnei Devarim, there were two rulings of Hanan, ben Avishalom, that were contentious, and Admon Omer Shiva, and Admon said seven. So we're going to now start going through those various contentious rulings. We'll start here first with the Hanan's. So the first of Hanan's two rulings that were very contentious was, Misha halach l'medina sayam, a husband who leaves to go on a trip at a distance. So he's gone for a long time. And while he's away, ve'isha tova'as mazonos, his wife now demands support. Then she goes to the bez, and she says, listen, my husband went out of town. He did not leave me with enough money, and now I don't have enough money to pay for my basic living needs. So I need you, please, to liquidate some of his assets, you know, sell his pickup truck, and give me money to eat. So, Hanan Omer Tishava Besof, Velo Tishava Betchila. Hanan says she'll have to take a shvua, swearing that she didn't get more than she's entitled to. Maybe she's lying, maybe he left her with what she needed, and she just, you know, she went and bought herself a diamond ring and didn't tell anybody. But when will she have to take a shvua to swear to that fact? Only besof at the end, which means according to the first pshat of the Bar Tanura and most, it means when she wants to collect her kasuba, ultimately at that point we'll say, listen, swear that you didn't get anything you were entitled to. But velo teshava betchila, but we don't make her take a shvua at the outset, meaning when she's collecting now, we don't make her take a shvua. The reason why is because that will ultimately lead to like a lot of friction between her and her husband. I mean, it's bad enough. She's claiming she has nothing to eat, and it's her husband's fault. Start making her like treat her like a criminal to swear that her husband didn't leave her enough, and so on. Just it's going to end up being a big fight, which we don't want. Therefore, Hanan says no shvua except besof, which means again when she collects her ksuba. The Bar Tanura does bring a second shot on besof based on the Rambam Perish Mishnayos, who holds that besof means when the husband comes back. Okay. Now, nechleku alav bnei kohanim gedolim. There was a chabura of boys, a group of boys whose fathers had been Kohanim Gadolim, and they, I guess, learned together. And they disagreed. Va'amru, they said, no, Tishava b'techila uvasof. They say, no, this woman should be swearing both at the beginning, meaning when she wants to collect, now that her husband's away, we're not going to start liquidating his assets and selling his pickup truck just because she said so. She has to swear she's entitled to it. And again, when she wants to collect her kasuba at the end, she'll have to swear again, and he could be, you know, it could be rolled in. This is part of the thing. This is part of the shvua, the swear, the oath that she makes at the time of collecting her kasuba, that also at this event she wasn't taking more than she was entitled to. Amar Rebbe Dosa ben Hyrcanus, Kedvrehem. Rebbe Dosa ben Hyrcanus, he said like them, and he agreed with the Bnei Kohanim Gedolim, that they were right, and she has to take a shvua b'tchila uvasof. And Amar Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, Yafa Amar Hanan. No, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai takes the other side, Hanan's position, which is Lo Tishava Ela Basof. She does not have to take a shvua now. We give her food because we want her to be fed properly, but she will have to take a shvua, of course, at the end before collecting her ksuba ultimately. Now, As far as the halacha goes, so first of all, there's an assumption that a man would not just leave home on a business trip going overseas and leave his wife with nothing to eat. No. So we assume he left her with the wherewithal to provide herself for 3 months. And even in our Mishnah, the assumptions we're talking about after those 3 months are up. Okay? So the Shulchan Aruch postulates that way, that for the first 3 months, we're not going to start liquidating his assets to provide for. We assume she was provided for by him already. Perhaps, you know, she's not any worse than the other, you know, poor person, and she'll have recourse to public funds if need be and so on, but we're not liquidating her husband's estate based on this assumption that he wouldn't do that to her. The Ramah does paskin, by the way, that if, he went not so far away and he just got held up, so that, or more importantly, if he left with her in a fight, so he stormed out of there and said, I'm going to Tahiti, goodbye. So then it's very reasonable to assume that he left and didn't provide for her. And like I said before, and similarly, if he was only going away for the weekend, but then the next thing you know, he just didn't come back because he got involved in something and was away for months, then of course, no reason to assume he left enough for her to be supported for several months, for 3 months, because that wasn't what he had in mind when he left. So then she would have recourse to the courts, who would then liquidate his stuff immediately to support her. Okay, after 3 months, at all events, we will allow her to go to the courts, who will sell stuff to get what they need to provide for her basic living expenses. We're not talking about jewelry and stuff, but basic living expenses and mazonos. We will sell stuff to provide for her. Anything that he's statutorily obligated to provide for her. And now when he comes back, we're not going to force her to take a shvua, either to get the stuff or when he comes back, unless he makes a counterclaim. When he comes back, if he has some sort of tana, he says, no, I provided for her, this wasn't right, I gave her food or money or whatever it is, so then at that point, he could force her to take a shvua that she indeed didn't have what she needed, because her position is, no, you didn't leave with enough money. So he can force her to take a shvua then, and the courts would enforce the shvua, including, a Gilgul shvua, whatever it has to be. She'd have to swear in everything right now that she didn't misappropriate funds that she wasn't entitled to.